Welcome to the 1% Leadership Podcast, where we challenge teachers and coaches to write their own story and improve by 1% each day so they can have a greater impact on their students and athletes. This is episode number 165 of the 1% Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, John Barth, and today's challenge for August 12th is discuss a person you know who shows character and personal pride no matter the results they produce in their life. Do you consider people like this winners, or is your definition of a winner based on the results they get on the scoreboard, their paycheck, or other external factors? Do you use the same standards to evaluate yourself? Today's challenge comes from our fundamentals of success of knowing your integrity. Let's take a look at a hypothetical situation. Let's say you're a new teacher who's been hired to teach fifth grade. There are two other fifth grade teachers in your building who each have over 20 years of teaching experience. The principal who hired you told you that both teachers are outstanding and considered some of the best teachers in the building. She suggests that you take an opportunity to observe both teachers once you get settled into a routine, and even offers to hire a substitute teacher to cover your class so you can spend time in their classrooms. You feel grateful to have such good role models at the beginning of your teaching career. When you ask other teachers about your two fifth grade colleagues, the responses are always similar. Maria gets praised at every faculty meeting for her students' exceptional grades and high test scores. And when you ask about Jasmine, everyone just says she's so awesome. After the first month of school, you decide to take a day and spend some time in their classrooms. In the morning, you head to Maria's classroom, and as soon as you enter, there is only one thing that enters your mind: discipline. The kids are sitting in their desks with pencils in hands, working feverishly. Maria is seated at her desk, alternating between writing things down on paper and working on the computer. As the morning wears on, you notice a distinct routine. For each subject, Maria gets up and instructs the class on the lesson for the day. The kids listen attentively. There's never any discussion, but occasionally Maria will ask some questions of the students. You notice that the same two or three students are always the same ones to answer the questions. You start to think about what you learned in college, and you believe this is a model of classroom management. No distractions, and kids who always seem to be on task. And like everyone has told you, Maria's results speak for themselves. With the largest number of kids on the honor roll and the highest standardized test scores, her methods seem to be effective. After lunch, you move across the hall to take in Jasmine's class. You get into the room and take a seat in the back before the kids return from lunch. The kids come in like a tornado, full of energy and very excited. You've had trouble getting your kids to settle down after lunch in this first month, so you're looking forward to seeing how a veteran teacher like Jasmine handles it. She walks in the room but doesn't say anything. It seems on the verge of chaos as she moves around talking to a few students individually. You think to yourself, no wonder the kids love her because she doesn't make them do anything and lets them do whatever they want. After a couple of minutes, the kids seem to settle into a routine, but they all seem to be doing something different. Some kids are sitting at tables, some kids are standing up. One kid is sprawled over a beanbag with his back arched and is reading upside down. After some time, Jasmine announces that it's time for social studies, and the students immediately start moving furniture around. The kids form a circle, although some are sitting on the floor, some are on stools or chairs, and some are standing. Jasmine holds a class discussion. She speaks less than 25% of the time, and almost every time she does, she's asking questions. After the discussion, kids work with partners to complete an activity. The noise level is so high, you're surprised other teachers aren't coming in to complain. For each subject throughout the afternoon, Jasmine engages the entire class when she gives her instruction and then always lets the kids work in groups. The kids do seem to be engaged in learning, but you wonder why none of the teachers mentioned Jasmine getting praised at faculty meetings. No one mentioned that her students' test scores and grades were extremely high. So while the students in Jasmine's class did seem to be engaged and they were definitely having fun, you believe that Jasmine's style of teaching is still not as effective as Maria's. Your job is to teach students the curriculum, and it appears that Maria's students are learning and retaining more information as based on their test scores. At the end of that first year of teaching, Maria receives the Teacher of the Year Award as her students receive the highest rating on the state standardized test of any classroom in the school. When you return to school in August for your second year, the principal tells you that they have found a replacement for Maria. You wonder what happened to Maria, and when you ask your colleagues, you found out that she was embezzling money out of the PTA fund, and she was fired. You had worked hard in that first year to establish discipline in your classroom like Maria. It wasn't exactly the same, but it was close to it. You ran a tight ship, and if the kids crossed the line, there were severe consequences. However, you were disappointed that your students' test scores weren't at least higher than Jasmine's. You knew they wouldn't be as high as Maria's, but you thought your classroom management would at least make the difference over the chaos of Jasmine's room. Even though Maria obviously lacked some integrity and made some bad decisions, she still knew how to control a classroom and get results out of her kids. You felt you were on the right track by modeling yourself after her, and you knew you wouldn't ever do anything stupid like steal money from the PTA. A few weeks later, your school is rocked by the news that Maria had been cheating on the standardized test for years by giving students the answers. She threatened the students physically if they would speak out of turn or distract anyone, and told them as long as they did what she told them, they would get good grades. Your principal had been involved as well in a conspiracy between her and Maria to bolster their own resumes by padding the scores. You realize you need to take some time and figure out what the principles and values are that you truly believe in after hearing all this news. So how about you? How do you determine whether or not people are winners? Do you look at their character no matter the results they produce? Or do you simply look at the external results they can get in a gradebook, on a standardized test, or on the scoreboard? What criteria do you use to evaluate yourself? Is it internal data or external data that you use to evaluate yourself? Knowing what makes someone a winner is part of knowing your integrity because it reveals your principles and values. It shows not only how you judge other people, but yourself as well. And in this scenario, it shows that data can be useful, but it can also be skewed. It can be corrupt. It can be totally inaccurate. Data is helpful and can provide some feedback in a lot of ways, but it should never trump our integrity, the principles and values we hold in our heart. And we must be solid in knowing our integrity if we're going to write our own story, if we're going to experience our best self, and if we're going to increase our impact on young people. We're going to have to know what we stand for. And from there, we can give our students and athletes a better version of ourselves every day.